Welcome to the Power Players Talk Show on Building Fortunes Radio with your host, Chris Molinari. Up-close and personal conversations with powerful and successful people who give our listeners the inside look on what it takes to move from average and ordinary to the top of your game. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Power Players Talk Show on buildingfortunesradio.com. Now, on to our show with your host, Chris Molinari.
Hello, this is Chris Molinari and Power Players Talk, and today we're just going to get right on it because we only have like 28 minutes. So my guest, who is actually really not a guest anymore, it's Mark Hankins, and we might as well say it's the Chris and Mark show. I don't know. But Mark, welcome to the call, and let's just get going.
Well, thank you, Chris. Go ahead and hit me with whatever you've got.
I will. I've got quite a bit. First of all, let's just chat a little bit about, you know, imagine my shock this morning to get up and see Gerald Nadler and good old Hank Johnson on my television, which was very upsetting to me, and then some other guy and then some very strange people talking about they want to be able to make the court larger, the Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court is really inherently racist, is kind of basically what they were saying, and that for so many years, especially since Trump was in, that I guess Roberts is the Supreme Court justice, isn't he, or something like that? Anyway, that they've been degrading our democracy and trying to just ruin our country for so many years. So that's something we can start with. So take it away.
Well, the Supreme Court has historically been a break against this country's attempted slide into socialism. And the last time we heard about court packing was in the FDR era when FDR was not able to get all of his socialist policies through. So they were talking about packing the Supreme Court back then. Now we've at least heard from Pelosi that she considers this a non-starter and will not move it forward in the House. But they have, I think, just trotted it out there to convince the far-left part of the Democratic Party that they've taken a run at it and that, you know, if the Republicans get out of line, they'll go ahead and do it. Right now we have a pretty even balance. I know people tend to think it's a conservative court, a 6-3 court, but remember you've got Roberts, who does not represent a strong conservative thought, and he goes squishy every time it comes right down to it. So we don't know who controls him or why, but he does not do the important ones for the right.
And, well, I've thought of that a lot. Every time, you know, something big comes up that would in any way benefit the right, for some reason, you know, even as far back as Obama, when he decided that the Obamacare, whatever that was a tax, which opened the door for Obamacare and did not help with anything that we were trying to do to What was it called that they want? They want, with Obamacare, they wanted basically to make it socialized medicine, right?
They wanted the individual mandate. They wanted to make sure who could buy insurance did buy insurance. And they made you pay a tax, or a penalty, really, if you didn't. And they called it a tax, but taxes have a special way of getting through Congress called the Ways and Means Committee, which never touched this. So really, in terms of following their own rules, the Congress did not. And that's an important part of the story, and it really was not correct to call it a tax. Roberts went ahead and did that, preserved the individual mandate. Of course, Trump later got rid of it, so we don't have to worry about it anymore. But if you recall correctly, Gruber, who I believe first name is Jonathan, who said that we couldn't have passed this if the American public was smarter. And
he said they're stupid, that American people are stupid, and they would fall for whatever, you know. And
right.
And actually, Gruber was one of the architects of Obamacare, and basically, I've seen the video on YouTube that he said, what was it he said about that? He said it was never meant to work, basically, is
right.
what he said.
The Gruber they threw out the window of Nakatomi Plaza was less villainous.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a Die Hard reference. And anyway, it's just I think it's just a scare. It's to scare the right into some kind of behavior, to some kind of it's to cow the right a bit. Look at how bad it could get. Don't play with it.
Right. Well, since we're on the subject of Obamacare, why don't we discuss vaccine passports and the wokeness of it and how far you think they're going to get with it?
Well, when you think about requiring people to be vaccinated to go certain places, this is something that involves endemic diseases that have a high degree of morbidity and mortality. This is malaria at best, you know, and at worst it's something like Ebola or Marburg or one of these terrible, awful filoviruses. So the and in between you have things like Chagas disease, you have dengue fever, which makes you feel like your bones are breaking. You have things that are pretty horrible and that kill a lot of people. COVID-19 isn't that. COVID-19 is probably the most manipulated virus in the history of virus scares. And we've had scares like the swine flu in the mid-70s. We've had the Hong Kong flu in the late 60s. And
Zika,
these things come up really far more than we realize. We just don't seem to have any memory for them. In fact, a round of flu, I believe it was it 2017, 2018? It was before that. There was a round of flu under Obama, and Ron Klain said that we should have had a mass casualty event, and they were just lucky. So
exactly. I've heard that, yeah.
The notion that you bring in a whole new, you make this the 9/11 of viruses and bring in an entire anti-freedom regime based on it is ludicrous. And requiring people to have vaccine passports to get into nightclubs or to go to fly internationally or to get to their job is insane. It's wrong. It's criminal. And I don't think the American people are going to stand for it. They may stand for it in other countries where people are docile and they look at their government as their protector and that kind of thing. But we know government is the same kind of untrustworthy servant that fire is, and same sort of frightful master that fire is. And we don't want to go in that direction. And I don't think we will.
I hope not. You know, pardon me, my ex-husband was in the military and my dad was in the military. So, you know, we had, before we could go to overseas, the families and even the military, they had to have certain shots because it was like what was that one that made that weird print on your arm? I can't even think of it.
Smallpox.
Smallpox. We had to have a smallpox vaccination, and, you know, we had to keep up with our the kids especially had to keep up with polio vaccines, and I think we had to have a typhoid shot before we went to Germany. But, you know, that was way back in the, you know, a long time ago. And, we had a shot record, and that was only so that the doctors would know if you had that or didn't have that. But it wasn't, I mean, it was in a way it was forced on you, but not like this, you know. I mean, it just seems different. Maybe it's not.
Right. They didn't start closing every door to to somebody who's unvaccinated.
No.
And you know, at the end of the day, they're going to be cutting off people's banking and access to social media and everything else. It'll drop your social credit score unacceptably low if you don't have the vaccine, and you will be unable to function, and you will get the vaccine in order to be able to do your banking, able to log on to Facebook and that kind of thing. We're talking about, you know, full-on tyranny. And it really should be, as Barney Fife would say, nipped in the bud.
I would say so, too. what was I going to say about that? I mean, as you said, a lot of countries kind of do that, and they're kind of forcing people to get the vaccine, but did you read the latest thing about Canada? That it's really frightening. They even have I don't know what you'd call them. I guess some people have had to go to hotels when they first get back to Canada and pay so that they're quarantined for a certain amount of time, and people that are going to refuse or have refused are being sent to sort of like detainment camps that they're setting up. And
right. Well,
it's just unbelievable that that their prince or whatever he's called, who's a very strange guy, he's literally said this on video that, you know, everyone's going to have to get the vaccine, and if you don't, you're going to be sent to a detention camp or some kind of a camp, and until you comply and take the vaccine. And hey, there are neighbors to the north.
And if you look at what's happened with the churches there, there's a church that keeps trying to open. They have literally fenced it off and put a garrison of riot police in it, 200 people.
Right.
It is, they're losing their minds, and they're becoming much more like Americans in terms of how feisty they're getting.
Right.
Not the nice Canadians we all remember.
No. You know, people used to joke about going into Canada and taking it over. I don't think they want to anymore. Anyway, so let's now talk about Minnesota and, you know, I mean, what's his name? Chauvin, the cop, is being tried, and They had this other just really bad traffic stop that this policewoman shot the guy. And, you know, here's how I look at it. I really believe that because of all of the trauma that's happened with cops and you know, after they either intentionally – well, I don't think they intentionally accidentally shoot and this person dies or whatever. But you know what? The person that was shot, if they hadn't resisted and tried to run, probably wouldn't have been shot. And this young guy, okay, he was 20, and it's sad that he got shot, but there was a warrant out for him for something pretty awful that he did. And so all of a sudden,
right,
it's because it was a white woman cop against a mixed race young guy that now Antifa and Black Lives Matter are all over crazy.
Well, I mean, let's pick that particular traffic stop apart. This is an individual who had earlier robbed a woman of $820 that she was carrying in her bra that was for the rent money at her particular apartment where he happened to be hanging out. And he basically, on a moment's notice, turned on a dime and robbed her,
right,
a friend of hers. So he had been out on bail for that, and he had violated some aspect of his release, and he was now under an arrest warrant. So we have a felon, a violent felon, because this was a strong-arm robbery, and he was now pulled over. Now, he was pulled over for a minor traffic infraction. I think they looked at his air freshener that was hanging from his rearview mirror and said it was wrong. And that may or may not be true, but that's supposedly what the pretext. And face it, this is probably a pretextual stop. They looked at him. He looked troubling. They decided to pull him over. She finds out that he has an arrest warrant, goes to arrest him. He twists out of the handcuffs. He gets back in the car. He tries to drive away. Now, this is a fleeing felon at that point. It is a felony to resist an arrest in that manner, and he had just committed it. They didn't know what was going on with him. They didn't know how dangerous he was or was not. But he should not be, you know, roaming in the community. He shouldn't be driving at a high rate of speed away from them. So they were ready to tase. But given the danger that he represented, this officer's hand was already on her gun. And that's where she made a simple mental mistake. And guns do weigh a lot more than tasers, and they're on the opposite side. They're on your non-dominant side rather than being on your dominant side. But as she's thinking about and talking about taser, she pulls the gun and fires it and then is greatly distressed to discover she shot the young man and now he is dead. This is not one of those things that happen. This really shouldn't have happened. She shouldn't have shot him. It was negligence. It was, and since it's negligence and somebody's dead, it's a negligent homicide. Now, this is one of those instances where qualified immunity, I think, does not apply because it was an inappropriate use of force. But it is also not one of the situations where rioting should apply. This is something that can be, you know, fully explained under the circumstances. It is not a racial profiling and consequently a stop that escalated to where it shouldn't have, or a behavior toward the young man that should not have occurred up until the moment where something other than a taser was used. And that was a you know, momentary lapse. So you don't have an officer who's really acting as some sort of, you know, Klans person.
It wasn't a George Floyd moment, which actually the George Floyd thing, there are questions about that too, but instantly everyone decided it was racially motivated and young black men are hunted down and, you know, it's just absolutely sad for her, sad for him, sad for everybody, because now it's a lie that, you know, I think I know that Black Lives Matter and Antifa wait for moments like this. This is like a moment for them to shine, you know, and especially Black Lives Matter to say how racist our country is. By the way, we need to take just a quick break and then we'll be right back. Is that okay with you?
Certainly.
Okay. Peter? Peter? I guess we're not going to have a break.
So let's
okay,
talk
let's
about
get back
the timing
to
of this. Things that happen in the spring set up the summer. So you've come out of winter when it's really too cold to protest and riot, and you are now in the time of year where people can get out and about and do this. They can be canvassed to come out of their homes. They can be, you know, harangued in public via speaker and wound up. And this is a winding up process. Now, it's not an election year, and, you know, Biden doesn't face the possibility of being turned out of office. So you won't see the kind of money thrown at it as you've seen in election years, particularly last year. You know, they've won what they needed to win. But
well, obviously they did, because one of the heads of Black Lives Matter, I won't mention her name, just bought 4 very expensive homes in California, one of which was in Topanga Canyon for $1.2 million, which for a Marxist person that she is very interesting. You know, I have not heard or seen one time when Black Lives Matter has given to communities for to better their community, you know, to better the people in the communities, they enrich themselves. So, I mean, to me, that's just the craziest thing. I mean, you'd think, you know, it's like when somebody robs a bank and they have partners and you see it on TV or movie or whatever, that now don't go out and spend a bunch of money because they'll notice you, you know. But apparently they don't care.
Well, the other thing is you have – when you call this woman a Marxist and she says, I'm a trained Marxist, we're talking about cultural Marxism, the Marxism of Herbert Marcuse and Anthony Gramsci, not necessarily the Marxism of Karl Marx. So we're talking about somebody who's wanting to remake society rather than remake ownership and work.
And exactly.
It's not a question of whether private people can own things. It's a question of which private people can own things. And should things be taken away from one set of private people and handed to another set of private people because of historic inequalities and slavery and that sort of thing? Obviously, there are large numbers of people who think no, and there are a number of people who say, well, you know, look at what happened to them and look at where the look at the wealth disparity in these two communities. And to a certain extent, there's some truth in it, but the notion of how to make these reparations and whether these reparations should even be attempted is one that society has not really grappled with at this point. And I'm not sure that it's in the best interest of society to grapple with it while we face external threats like China. And while we could go the way of Russia under the czars when it flipped to communism and communism was horrendous for 75 years. This is what could happen to us, and we need to look at Russia as a cautionary tale and look at Russia today not as an enemy but as a model of how to get out of that kind of trap. But we don't want to go into it in the first place.
Exactly. I certainly don't. While we're at it, I was on your Facebook page, and I found this very odd document that apparently, I mean, I don't know if you know what school it was from or whatever, but I just thought I'd read it, and then you can just, you know, we have about 6 or 7 minutes left, but I'll just briefly read it, and then we can kind of discuss that. Okay, it starts off, every student at the school must also sign a student life agreement, which requires them to aver that the world as we understand it can be hard and extremely biased, that they commit to recognize and acknowledge their biases when we come to school and interrupt those biases and accept that they will be held accountable should they fall short of the agreement. A recent faculty email chain received enthusiastic support for recommending that we officially flag students who appear resistant to the culture we're trying to establish. When I questioned what form this resistance takes, examples presented by a colleague included persisting with a colorblind ideology, suggesting that we treat everyone with respect, a belief in meritocracy, and just silence. In the special assembly in February 2019, our head of school said that the impact of words and images perceived as racist, regardless of intent, is akin to using a gun or a knife to kill or injure someone. I mean, that's really, really smacking of socialism and even communism as far as I'm concerned.
So let's drill down and look at the term flag, because this means no letters of recommendation for any of these kids that are not on the right side of what the faculty sees. So that kid either has to be super likable or has got to be willing to you know, confine themselves to writing a nice essay to Hillsdale College and saying, I got blackballed at this leftist school. and Hillsdale probably won't let them in for being dumb enough to go there in the first place. So it's not a good situation. If this came home with my kid, I'd pull my kid out in a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
This is not the way schools operate in Florida, thank God. And or, you know, maybe a few do down in Miami or in Fort Lauderdale. But it really shows a kind of a sickness and rot, because they're willing to give up on the free exchange of ideas, on the free the ability to think freely, and they're willing to say, you fall in line. And that, again, is not the American way. That has been the way of the totalitarians, the East Germans, the Russians, until recently the Chinese, all the time. When you have this kind of intellectual straitjacket, this is bad for a country. This will fall away, but it's going to hurt a lot of other people. It's going to hurt a lot of people in the meantime.
Well, it's moving into the Chinese way of their credit score, which isn't really a credit score. How about if we – maybe you could come on with me next week and we can talk about that, their credit system.
Well,
and
I can
it involves
tell you, this
behavior and everything else.
Until the late 60s. This country had that credit system until the late 60s. So as shocking as it is, and we'll talk about that next week, but it's true.
Okay.
It's nothing new, and we had it. So,
oh, my gosh.
It's frightening, and you'll be shocked at who put it out there, who helped do it when it was done. Because
good grief. I don't remember that. I guess it was too young.
You'll think they're the nicest people in the world. What the heck? But it's true. You'll be shocked when you find out.
Well, and how we got rid of it would be very interesting too. So let's just start it up again next Thursday. And I'm so glad you were on with me, and we'll be on again next week. So thanks, everybody,
okay,
for listening, and we'll see you next week.
And I leave you with a cliffhanger.
Oh, thank you, Mark.
You've been listening to the Power Players Talk Show on buildingfortunesradio.com. with Chris Molinari. Up close and personal conversations with powerful and successful people who give our listeners the inside look on what it takes to move from average and ordinary to the top of your game. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear more Power Players Talk Show segments. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Thanks for listening. Spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.